Moncrief on News Talk.
Family histories live on in memory, of course, but a bit of help doesn't do any harm. For the last few years, the historian Turtle Bunbury has been offering a service that records people's individual oral histories. Turtle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So how does this work? Do the people who you're going to record, do they tend to approach you, or would it tend to be a family member?
Oh, by and large, it is a family. Well, it was a family member, but now it's more and more people, actually. So, yeah, initially it was sort of daughters and sons who had gathered and thought, cripes, we need to get, you know, mum and dad's stories recorded. But, and, you know, a lot of the people who would be interviewing them would be in their sort of 70s, 80s. But as I say, quite recently, we've had a whole flurry of people in their 60s and even down to their late 50s who've been contacting us saying that they want to get their sort of story down.
OK, and those people in the younger cohort, for want of a better phrase, do they have a compelling reason as to why they want to do that? Is there something they perhaps want to explain?
Yeah, it's interesting because I wondered about that initially. But yes, no, they do. Everybody has a story to tell. And, you know, actually, when people are in their younger 50s and 60s, they've got really strong memories and they're very fluent at them. And I think one of the things we've noticed is actually, you know, the more fluent you are, the better it is from our end for getting the stories down. So, yeah, no, we have had very good feedback from the younger ones as well, actually.
Yeah. And do you generally go to visit them, or are you like doing this over Zoom?
By and large, it is over an equivalent of Zoom. It's something very similar to that. Although I have, of course, I go and visit people as well. But yeah, no, we use modern technology. That's the point, that you can record memories, from anywhere. And you know, at the other end of the spectrum, the idea is that we have an MP3 that you can then send out to these families all around the world. You know, because that is the joys of modern technology.
Yeah. Now, who do you send the MP3 to? Because if the request comes from the individual, are they saying, I just want it and I might distribute it to my family, say, at a later point? Or how does that work?
Correct. Yes. So you send it to that person because you do need to, you know, check that everybody's on board with everything and they need to clarify that they're happy with everything they've said. So it would go to the individual, the individual who's basically commissioned it.
Yeah.
And then they send it on themselves.
And for the older ones, memory mightn't be that great about certain points. Do you try and kind of fill in the gaps to any extent?
Yeah, so that's what, you know, one of the bits you do beforehand is you try and map out a chronology for them to work with, either with the individual themselves or with their family, so that they can get down the details of, you know, who their family members were, the sort of locations that are relevant, maybe the townland, the local farms, etc. And then the chronology of their life, you know, the where they were at school, where they worked, you know, the key events, people they met. And if they have that information in front of them, it helps the whole thing to, you know, run much more fluently.
Yeah. And do you edit it afterwards? Because I imagine it depends on how good a talker the person is, but people could yak on for hours about things.
You definitely get some that love, you know, would go on for weeks. Yeah, you know, you have to do a little bit of spit and polish, but, you know, we also, you kind of, you know, you almost want to leave quite a lot of those little nuances that you might edit out for a radio interview or something like that, because it's quite sweet for the family to get or so on.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do a little bit of tweaking.
Yeah. And so the finished product, is there a length they're aiming for the finished product, or it just depends on how much they talk for?
Yeah, sure. By and large, we roll it up into about 60 minutes is what we tend to do. You know, that goes out. That's a sort of bare bones audio interview, which goes out, as I say, in an MP3. But sometimes some people are on such a roll and so hilarious that you've got to just keep going a bit longer, you know?
Yeah, I suppose it depends on the story. And do you feel, or have you ever felt that you might have to fact check some things if they say something that they think it happened and you think, I don't really know if you assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, you know, that kind of thing.
Fair point. yes, there would probably be the occasional eyebrow-raising moment, but, you know, these are for their own family and so forth. They're not, you know, it's not as if they're being shared in the public domain.
Mm.
So I think that's okay. And generally, you're, you know, in contact with family members as well.
Yeah.
Nearly every time you're in touch with family members. And then there's a whole sort of corporate side as well, because we've ended up doing quite a series of stuff for companies that kind of want to have records of their elders, their retired members of staff and so forth, you know, and getting all those experiences and memories of the company on. And perhaps not all those memories would want to be circulated, but that in itself has been...
Yes. I was embezzling from this company for years. Ha ha.
Yes, exactly. It's banking memory. That's what it is. It's what you alluded to earlier. You know, memories do fade, and you know, this is an opportunity to try and get as many of those recollections as you can down, recorded.
I imagine for some of the ones that are done in a family context, is some of the stuff very deeply personal, where they're perhaps trying to explain themselves to children or to siblings or whatever.
Yes, we have. I mean, we definitely have one woman in very particular who found it very cathartic to set the record straight. She'd clearly, gone off the rails a little in her younger years. She was back on track now, but she wanted to tell her story for her family. And Ali, my wife, was actually sitting in with her for that recording. And it was extraordinary, because it did bring a huge sense of peace to her to record it. And then, sadly, she died since, but we heard from her family after that, and it meant an enormous amount to them to have that recording, that explanation, if you like.
Yeah. Who is the oldest person you interviewed?
Well, there was a woman who went on to be 108, but I interviewed her when she was 106. She was pretty amazing.
Wow.
And then there was another wonderful woman who was used to go to church with Maud Gonne when she was young. was 104, and she went to church in Dublin, and Maud Gonne, who would have been very distinctive, I imagine, even, to a small child. She remembered her. Nellie O'Toole, another wonderful woman who lived to be 102. And her top tip was a cup of Barry's tea first thing in the morning every day. Two sugars and a dash of milk.
Okay, not Lyons then, Barry's tea. That's why people in Cork live for such a long time. And you did have a fella who was on a border post in Libya.
That was brilliant. Yeah, this chap, he was one of the very early guys I interviewed, and he was a farmer in West Cork. Totally surprised me by telling me that he knew Gaddafi. And I'm like, how on earth did you know Gaddafi? He had gone over to England when he was a young fella to work as a bus driver, and somehow he had ended up driving ambulances and lorries in Libya. And the man in charge of one of the border posts down there was indeed a young Bedouin by the name of Gaddafi. And I got it was a brilliant quote. He said, he was a very sulky man. I said to my mates that if ever there's to be a coup in this place, he'll be the fecker who leads it.
Very astute prediction there. And had a memory of being in school, being taught to make sandcastles in the classroom.
Yeah, isn't that it's absolutely lovely. Basically, the it was with the sisters in Cork, and one of the sisters would go off to the beach and get several buckets of sand, and then they had an old billiards table that didn't work anymore, and she'd pour the sand all over the billiards table and then bring everybody in, and they'd learn how to make sandcastles. I just thought it was absolutely lovely. That was in the 1920s. The man who told me that was at school in the 1920s. So,
crikey.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. And a lot of this is happening. Is it word of mouth that people are finding you, Turtle? Or do you have like an official website now?
Well, we have. Yes, it is turtlebunbury.com. You can go there and find out about it. Yes, but it is, it started as word of mouth, as all of these things do. And then it was actually sort of lovely. It went from a couple in the west of Ireland, and then they decided that the auntie might need it, and then it went to the in-laws, and soon we were covering people across Mayo, Sligo, Galway. It's one of those things that's, spreads. And actually, likewise, the corporate side of things, we've gone from one to the next with that as well. Turtlebunbury.com is where you find out the deets.
Yeah, it's a lovely idea. Turtle Bunbury, thanks a million.
Thank you, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.